This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, everybody, Trey Wingo here, and the Michael K. Show with Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg starts right now. Question, will this be a day without a Don rant?
Thank you, Trey, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on a Monday, President's Day, February 15th, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, and Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. And the other 20, you know the deal. Definitely your responsibility. Hope you all had a good weekend. When you last saw us or heard us, Don and I were going at each other. And I don't think that we can ignore the elephant in the room and just pick up as if it didn't happen. But I would like to say this. I'd like to say a couple of things. Those that are on Twitter, right? A lot of people really dug into this. The ones that lose me are the ones that say that's artificially done so that we can goose ratings. Well, number one, we don't need to goose ratings. Number two, what morons we must be to actually do something at the end of a Friday show to goose ratings. You've got 2 days that it's going to die down before you even come back on the air, so it's not going to goose any ratings. Silliness. Those that think that Don's rants or any kind of arguments that we have are artificially manufactured, maybe you should find another source of entertainment because you're just not getting it. You're not getting it. Number two, I think Don and Michael, they'll never be the same. I could see this show ending. Michael will do the show alone. Peter and Don will do another show. Don is like really a brother to me. I can't speak for him how he feels about me, but I will tell you, I was very, very angry at the end of the show.
Oh, you sure were.
And it was legitimate anger, and I'm sure Don was angry too. He threw his headphone. And after the show was over, I was really furious. And then Don, I felt in a way sorry for, because he had to do play-by-play. But he had a half hour to rejigger his emotions, but that was real. Do I hate Don? No. Was I upset with him? Yes.
I hate Don.
Am I over it? Yeah, I'm over it. I mean, maybe we'll revisit the conversation we had. And Don and Peter could give their take on it, but bottom line is, people argue. That's what these shows are about. We argue. We disagree on things. That's what makes it what it is. Doesn't mean we're going to break up. No. I mean, Don and I, Peter's not Yoko Ono in this, so we're cool. But it was legitimate, and I know that Don was legitimately angry, I could tell, and I was as well. And we're over it. I wished him happy birthday, and we move on.
Yeah, both can be true. We can be angry at each other, mad at each other, and yet still move on from it, and everything's fine. That happens a lot in my life, where the people that I'm the closest to are the ones I get in the most passionate arguments with,
because you
know that there's always going to be a point to be able to return because you genuinely still care about each other, but you're going to have throwdowns every once in a while. And I was frustrated, and I was mad. That's why I threw the headphones and disconnected with the camera before the show was officially over.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that.
But, yeah, strategically, I'm not sure that it, 6:24 on a Friday is the best time to really just captivate your audience.
They
happen when they happen. At 12:30 that night, technically Saturday morning, I got a text from Michael wishing me a happy birthday. And I got back to him and said, thanks, it means a lot. I was still angry. I was even more angry when MSG is very nice to feed us, even though there's no press meal. But it was like salmon, and I was not into that.
So the only thing you had to look forward to was something delicious.
But by the time I did the game, and the game was awful, and so that's a whole other thing. Rangers lost 1-0. But that's sports radio, man. People are passionate, and you get into it, and that's fun. You get over it.
Let's go back, because a lot of people listening.
You're such an instigator.
Why would you do this?
Because
people listening. This nice peace offering. Now we're going to go revisit it for who?
The audience. There are people who weren't
listening.
That's
what social media was for. It was all over the place.
No, they need to hear it. Let's go back, Anthony. Let's hear the 20 seconds of what really happened.
Ass.
Guys, we have to end the show.
Move on to the next subject. I just won.
Don't fight. It's over. The clock zeroed out. You lost.
Got there.
Tough break, man. Next time, maybe you'll do a better
job.
Better. Next time, you might do a better job.
All right, guys, that'll do it for ENN.
Don't just keep talking over me. He's still better.
I'll talk over you. I can do whatever I want.
Well, I'll do it. I'll scream over you too. Two mature adults. Now, since you played the tape, the thing that bothered me is we were having a discussion and an argument, and then Don just became very antagonistic, if you heard.
He did.
Oh, you're wrong. You're wrong.
You weren't?
You're wrong. Well, you lost. That's what got me. Hold on.
Wait, so in other words, you guys have both put out a fake apology to each other. Neither of you's actually acknowledged.
No. Wait a second. I don't think either of us apologized.
No.
We're fine. We're just that's what happens, and we move on.
That's what happens when you're passionate.
He's not sorry. I'm not sorry at all.
So, Don, you don't think you, at that point, when you said, sorry, better luck next time, you lost, you don't think that elevated things a bit?
Of course it did. See, we agree.
I don't worry about feelings. See, that's why it's so great. Like, if I don't know a person, if I'm going to do a show with somebody that I just got introduced to, you're probably not going to go there. Because you don't know how they're going to feel about it. You could get out of hand. But when you know somebody for 20 years, okay, mm-hmm. You know that it's going to be okay. So no matter how far you push it, no matter how much you want to kill each other at the moment, that everything's going to heal and be fine. So you take it. Take it to the limit. Why not? That's what makes it so interesting to listen to.
But you got me with the whole
Baker Mayfield was 10 times better than Sam, so it got crazy. And then Peter's instigating it.
No.
And it's the end of the show, and we're talking over each other. So, but I honestly, Michael, I never thought for a second that this would end the show. I never thought for a second that it would carry over to today because it's just a sports argument. We weren't arguing politics. We weren't arguing about something I did to you or you did to me. It was just a sports argument.
Now, for those that are totally in the dark, we were arguing because Todd McShay was on the show, and this will lead us into what we want to talk about, and said that, I mean, he's a big, big Sam Darnold supporter. Loved him coming out of college, still loves him, thinks that he's been mishandled by terrible coaching, and thinks that down the line, he could be a top seven quarterback, which again, maybe he could be. I mean, nobody could predict the future, but what he's shown me in 3 years and what I've seen from other young quarterbacks leads me to believe that that's not likely unless there's a huge, huge turnaround. And listen, I'm no God. I have no idea if he goes somewhere else and finds it. I haven't seen it. Now, the Baker Mayfield thing, 10 times is hyperbolic, but you know, people are saying until this year he was bad. My point is that his rookie season, under a terrible coach, he set the rookie record for touchdowns by an NFL quarterback ever. We've not seen that from Sam. That's my whole point. So that's 10 times, yeah, that's ridiculous.
But
10 times. But to say that he's going to be better than Baker Mayfield, again, it's going to be a challenge to be that.
Well, and again, he doesn't have to be. Again, when we're talking about top 7-8 quarterbacks is what Todd McShay had.
Right.
And it's obviously not going to happen right away now that you're starting all over, if indeed they did bring him back with a new coach and a new offensive coordinator and all that and having to reconstruct an entire offense. It could be 2-3 years before he can hit that. And by that time, you know, Brady's most likely gone. Rodgers is on the down end. Roethlisberger's out of here. And now you're going to be talking about the Josh Allens, the Baker Mayfields, the Justin Herberts, the Joe Burrows. And even if all those guys end up being better, that could still put him in the top 7 or 8 quarterbacks of the NFL. So it's not that great of a compliment, but it could be good enough to try to go out there and win. But the lack of weapons, the lack of coaching has just been catastrophic. But all that said, Michael, he's gone. He's not coming back.
Which is where we'll start off today.
And that's why it's I would bring him back, but every indication right now, and I thought about it all weekend, like how worthless that argument was, because I think the Jets have already made the call.
Well, every team's social media, we can't assume that social media is vetted up to like Woody Johnson and Joe Douglas or the president of the Jets. There's somebody that runs a social media account. You hire that person and you trust them to do it. And a lot of teams put out social media postings regarding mock drafts. But most of them put out all the mock drafts that are out there. The Jets today put out Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network's mock draft. And in that one, that's the only one they put out, Wilson from BYU, Zach Wilson, is the number two pick for the Jets. Now, as if that wasn't piling on enough to Sam Darnold, on the bottom of the post, they have a quote from Jeremiah where, what exactly did he say, Anthony?
Don? No, there's a couple of Wilson's upside would be tough to pass up.
Right. This is the Jets social media account.
Right.
So here's my point. That would be like on your wife's social media account, she talks about Leonardo DiCaprio is the hottest man in the world, and I would leave my husband for him in a moment. They're pretty much telling Sam Darnold, look, this is what we're checking off on. This is what we're sending out. This mock draft that has us taking Zach Wilson, and the guy just effusively we took a look at all 32 teams, and I guess the closest that we come to something like this would be four teams. I think the Rams did something like that. The Washington football team did something like that. And I'm not sure of the other one. And then there's the Jets. This just isn't done. And if that's not a warning flare to all Jet fans, it's not going to be Sam. It's not.
Right.
It's not. And we knew that when we talked to Joe Douglas, even before they hired Robert Saleh, when he changed his whole tone of voice, when I brought up, well, you got to pay him $25 million a year after next. Well, that certainly comes into, I mean, didn't skip a beat. That certainly comes into the equation.
Sure.
So I don't think Sam's coming back because they don't look at him as somebody that would be worth $25 million against the cap.
But never mind that. Look at it even deeper, right? Because I thought about this after I saw the tweet. See, I hate what you said because it said a lot of times, oh, that's just the social media. They're a bunch of kids running the Twitter, and you can't. No. I mean, if you're a well-run organization, you can strategically claim that, but it's also a great way to get a feel for what your fan base is thinking.
Right.
And
throwing out trial balloons.
Right. And I think Woody Johnson comes back, and let's face it, Chris Johnson running this thing was a dumpster fire, right? He comes back, and he's thinking to himself, we went 2-14 last year. How am I going to sell to my fan base? How am I supposed to get my fan base excited when everything is pointing to having a full house on opening day in the NFL, right? You figure by September, we should be back. Especially if there's 10% before February is already over. Very good possibility MetLife Stadium, opening day, Jets, whoever, is going to have 80,000 people in the building. How do I sell to my season ticket holders, my fan base, after going 2-14, we're bringing Sam back? All the fans want a shiny new toy, right? And now they got a chance at the second overall pick. From a PR standpoint, Woody Johnson might be thinking, we've got to sell something here. How do I sell Sam, who's been a losing quarterback for 3 years for what has been three losing seasons? We can start over again. And then you look at Joe Douglas, Michael, who's like, I'm rolling the dice no matter who it is, if it's Wilson or if it's Darnold. So why not roll the dice with my guy instead of McCagnan's guy?
Right, and a cheaper guy.
So I think everything points to just hitting the reset button, getting as far away as you can from the McCagnan era, getting as far away as you can from 2-14. Now, I wouldn't do it because I'm a fan of Sam, and I listen to what Dan Orlovsky says. I listen to what Todd McShay says. I listen to what Bill Parcells says. I mean, listen, I'm no quarterback guru, but you got a lot of people, Michael, you have to admit this, that are on the Sam bandwagon. So one of the things you do when you don't 100% know is you listen to the people that are in the know. And there's a lot of people in the know that want to back them. But the easier thing for the Jets to do and for their fan base to sell it and get rid of the stink of 2-14, especially if you can get a first-round pick for Sam, which would then be throwing a bone to the Sam backers, Michael, from a public relations standpoint, isn't that the easiest thing for the Jets to do?
Probably. Because if they let the quarterback go and they keep Sam and Sam still continues to struggle, then you've got an issue. You got a real issue. And as much as we love Todd McShay and Mel Kiper Jr. and all of these guys that do mock drafts and evaluate the college kids, they're wrong. They're wrong a lot. I mean, Todd McShay, who we love, said Dwayne Haskins is going to be a star. So, he said he's not going to be a star with the team that drafted him.
No. What about Pittsburgh, though? I think it'll be great.
I bet you he's got a better chance there than he did in Washington.
Probably.
But why would you say that? I mean, it seems like Ron Rivera cleaned everything up and he couldn't succeed this year.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't there with Jay Gruden, you know?
Yeah, it's awful. So, I mean, people are wrong. But, you know, if I'm Todd McShay and all the guys that trumpeted Sam Darnold coming out of college, I'm going to hold my hand. I'm not going to turn in the cards and say, give me three new cards. I'm going to go down with this guy and go, I still think he's going to be great. But, you know, I wrote down all the young quarterbacks in the NFL. And, I mean, just give me a yay or an A. Who do you think has the better future? Okay? And that's what the Jets have to decide, too. So I kept out all the guys like Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. They're all older quarterbacks. Josh Allen. You think that Josh Allen would be better, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I was doing some work.
As you said, Don, we're not experts. This is not rocket science. It's guessing.
But obviously, the guy's played in made the playoffs in back-to-back years and looks like he's a much better quarterback.
Right. Dak Prescott.
Much better.
Lamar Jackson. He's an MVP already.
Yeah.
Joe Burrow. This is one to debate back and forth. People say, well, Cincinnati had much better weapons. Okay. Yeah, but they also had a terrible team.
I'll make it easier for you, Michael. Everybody you mentioned is going to be better.
Well, no, there could be Baker Mayfield. He's been better.
He had a better rookie season than Sam's rookie season.
Deshaun Watson, better.
Yeah.
Ryan Tannehill, I don't know.
Well, certainly it helped going to Tennessee. But when he was in Miami, very similar, right?
Very similar. That's what people are hanging their Sam hat on.
Had that one catastrophic injury that really hurt him.
Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, and Kyler Murray. So that's – I put 10 quarterbacks down. If he's better than four of those in the next 4 years – then you know what? Todd McShay was right because those guys are going to be the best quarterback unless a guy like Trevor Lawrence just rockets out of Clemson and becomes great in the first year.
But there's a couple of things at play here. I mean, obviously, everybody that you're going to mention for the most part is better. But I did some digging and I looked, you know, Burrow had a much better rookie year than Sam did. Herbert had a much better rookie year. But Josh Allen was interesting. You realize Sam was much better than Josh in his first year. And they both came in the league together, right? And then what happens to Buffalo? You know, especially this year, they go out and they get Diggs, and now he's really turned the corner. And he's been able to stay healthy, and he's got a really well-coached team, and you've seen much better. And what's happened to Sam is the complete opposite, right? His last four games of his rookie year, Sam was playing excellent. Had like three of those four games, he threw for over 280 yards, multiple touchdowns. He was looking very good at the end of 2018. Nobody was complaining about Sam at the end of his rookie season. They were upset about his injury early on, but when he got healthy in December, high quarterback rating, he felt good. And then what happens? The first month of 2019 thrown away. He had mono against Buffalo on opening day and then missed the next three games.
Yep.
You don't think that derailed his season, basically missing the first month of the season? And then the team is god-awful, awfully coached, all right? Had some decent games down the stretch of 2019, but not a great year. And then last year, another disaster. Injuries, all the weapons are either hurt or ineffective. Chris Hogan, who they got to help as a weapon, do you realize he retired? He's going to join lacrosse?
I saw that.
You know, so
what does that mean?
He's going to become a professional lacrosse player.
He's
going pro in lacrosse.
Yes. Big money in that sport.
So one of their weapons, their big acquisition in the offseason, ended up playing 1 year, and that was going to play lacrosse. Perryman got hurt. Crowder got hurt, right? Bell was completely ineffective and not used when he was effective. So, hey, I know I come across as an apologist for Sam, but while a lot of those quarterbacks had weapons and grew, it's been a mess for him. So at least the jury's out because it's been such a colossal dumpster fire around him for the first 3 years. That it really makes it difficult comparing them to other quarterbacks that, though they may have been on bad teams, Peter, had some weapons, had some coaching, had a much better situation. As bad as the Jets were, as bad as Cincinnati and the Los Angeles Chargers were, and one of those teams let go of their coach, was it nearly as bad as the Jets, Peter?
Well, let me tell you this, though. If they don't get rid of him, then what's happened over this offseason is a perfect continuation of everything you just described. I mean, he's got to be getting emotionally and mentally rebroken over the last few weeks. Mock draft tweets, receivers dissing him in interviews, no support from anyone.
Right.
So if they decide to keep him, what's happening right now is a continuation of breaking him down.
See, that's a great point. That's why I think he's gone. Because there's really been no support system whatsoever. So they must know they're drafting. Because it's different. If this was, we're going to get Watson, well, you don't know if you're going to get Watson. But they know they can draft a quarterback. That
now,
they know.
There's a guy on Twitter, The Gentleman, right? He writes, "Hey, Michael K., the Jets have been posting mock drafts on their social media for years. This is nothing new." But this is.
No.
You could have a mock draft where it says the Jets are going to take a wide receiver or an offensive lineman or an edge tackler or an edge rusher. That doesn't mean that somebody's job is over. If you post a mock draft and you're effusive about the number two pick being a quarterback, that means your franchise quarterback, Sam Darnold, is done.
Right.
That's
totally.
Why this is different. This is not just they're taking a wide receiver. You could take a wide receiver and all of the other wide receivers could still think, we'll just be with them. But if you take a quarterback with the second pick, then your quarterback is out.
They posted the quote that says it's tough to pass up.
That's a terrible job by them because you're insulting Darnold. Whoever did that, I mean, you got to know better. You still have a quarterback in-house.
Unless you want to do it.
Unless you want to do it. But also, Peter, not a good idea to tip your hand because then you're going to ruin the value. What are you going to get back for him?
Great point.
They probably
so whoever runs social media for the Jets, that's a little bit of a drop pass right there.
And is it possible that was done independently of like Joe Douglas and Woody Johnson's knowledge?
Yes, it is possible.
Well, then that's a bad job out of them. Because when it says New York Jets with a blue check next to it, that's the Jets. It may be some 24-year-old intern doing it, but it's still the Jets. So you got to pay attention to what's going on there.
Yeah, I think that team, I mean, social media is such an important part of the message that you get out to anybody, any business, that you really have to have someone responsible and with a history of the franchise and, you know, just knowledge of what's going on and how something that you post is going to affect people. You can't, I don't believe it's an intern running it, but it's probably a young person who doesn't understand the ramifications of what they did. And I don't think that the social media manager of each team has the ability to walk into Woody Johnson's office and, what do you think about this, Skip? You got to have somebody responsible in that position. That's a bad look what they did. When you have a quarterback on your roster that still is technically, quote-unquote, your franchise quarterback, and you're trumpeting the fact that Daniel Jeremiah said the Jets are taking Wilson. Not a good look.
Yeah. And his quote that he'd be tough to pass up.
Right. Speaking of Wilson, it's being reported that Justin Wilson, who the Mets wanted to bring back, has signed a minor league deal with the Yankees to pitch out of their bullpen. So that's
two ex-Mets now because they, over the weekend, right, Jay Bruce signed a minor league contract.
Jay Bruce. I'll get into this later, but boy, terrible move, another old DH outfield. Why is it a terrible move? It's $1.35 million. It's a minor league deal, and the only way he makes a team is if somebody gets hurt or falls flat on their face. So why is it a terrible deal? They don't have lefty bats. You don't know if they're bringing back Gardner. Why is that a terrible deal? Stop yourself. People get upset about the strangest thing. A minor league deal, bring a guy into camp, they're getting upset. This portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Two by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pickard designed the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit Two by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. We'll take your phone calls on this matter. A lot of stuff to do. Hey, by the way, Julius Randle is going to join us at 5 o'clock. The Knicks with two big wins since last we spoke to you, and they play again tonight against Atlanta. So Julius Randle will join us, and maybe we'll make a little push for him to make the All-Star team. How about that?
Let's do it.
What's on your shirt today, Peter? It looks like a woman leaning against the bottle.
This is Sonny. WWE legend Sonny, and it's a play on the old Absolute bottles. And
yeah.
Says, absolutely Sonny.
Is it S-U-N-N-Y?
S-U-N-N-Y, yeah.
Interesting.
The great Sonny.
Have they made a T-shirt of you yet, former 24/7 champion?
You know, it's not right. They have not, but I am going to be making a shirt, and I will get you one ASAP. I know how important it is to you.
Okay, good. 1-800-919-3776. We're going to talk to you next right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you get a good birthday present, Don, on Saturday? Anything you could talk about?
I got a couple of books. I got the Jerry Seinfeld book.
Oh, nice.
I got a book, I think it's called like The Real Goodfellas. It's supposed to be like the behind-the-scenes story of the movie. That was another book. I got great sweaters. I got this sweater.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that new? I like it.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Anything
beautiful.
Curtis Armstrong related?
No. I read his book. I saw his movies. We're good. I don't know what else I got to do.
He picked
you want to have him on, I'll have him on in a second.
Oh, you'd love to have him on.
So would you. Very talented individual.
Nothing like a booger segment. I've always said that. Hey, you know, I've been meaning to show you guys this, and I never did. I don't know how to feel about it.
Okay.
So it's going to take you guys about 3 weeks to see it, but my sister got me this for my birthday, and it's A Wonderful Life, the movie, and what it is the compressed film. This is what the compressed film looks like of It's a Wonderful Life.
I'm waiting now to see.
All the frames, all the pictures and stuff like that, and if you compress it, this is what it comes out to. It's a Wonderful Life.
It comes out looking like a barcode?
Yeah, it does.
I mean,
because it's a black and white movie, I guess it looks different. They do it for movies that are actually color as well, but this is a black and white movie, so as Don said, looks just like a barcode.
I mean, the sentiment is there, I get it, but optically it just looks like a barcode.
I'll take your
word for it that it's a wonderful life. It could be anything.
You're right. You're absolutely right. So I told my sister I didn't quite know what to feel about it, but
well, there's a bigger question too.
What's that?
Is what Jody thinks about it.
She hasn't really said much, which tells me that she's saying a lot.
Because Jody's going to make the call about whether this thing sees the light of day or not.
Well, I mean, if something like that sees the light of day, it's either here in the office where she's hardly ever, or downstairs where I work out. So it's not like it would be in the living room.
What's like the painting of your family that you have up today?
It's not of my family. It's just me.
You have a painted portrait of yourself?
Yeah, I've been looking at the shot over the last couple of weeks, and there's just a curtain there behind the pictures of Charlie and Callie. So this portrait that was done of me was done by a longtime coach at Fordham, Coach Dillon, who's actually Matt Dillon's dad.
Oh, wow.
The actor. And they had a roast of me like 10, 15 years ago. And this was a gift, and I never hung it up because why would I hang a picture of myself up? But I thought I'd put it behind me as a goof.
It's nice, though. It's one of those things. It's hard to know what to do with it.
Yeah, you can't do anything with it other than, like, mock it. And it's a beautiful – the coach did an unbelievable painting, but I'm not going to hang a picture of myself up.
See,
but to put it on TV to get laughs, you know.
And it's interesting, too, because it's like you, but it looks like a 50s dad version of you.
Which is pretty much me.
Yeah, that is true.
All right, so when we left the air on Friday, viciously left the air, the Knicks were going to play Washington without Bradley Beal, and they played Washington, and they really, really played well, and they won. I said, okay, they're supposed to beat Washington. And then they beat Houston. And after James Harden has left, Houston's not an easy game. And then they beat Houston. And now, tonight, they're going to play Atlanta. And if you look at the Knicks' schedule over the next couple of weeks, every game is winnable. I mean, there's not like a Lakers there. There's not a top-flight team. Every game is winnable, which will change the way you look at the Knicks and might change the way you look at a possible big-time acquisition of Bradley Beal. Now, Alan Hahn, who knows the Knicks as well as anyone, talked about on his show, Barton Hahn, what the Knicks would need to give up for Bradley Beal. Here's Alan.
If I'm the Wizards and I'm like, okay, I'll trade this guy, but you got to give me, let's see, quickly, RJ, Mitch.
Nah.
A couple of firsts.
Nah. You can have a
guy's
three
averaging 30 a game. You're not going to give him up for nothing. He just signed a contract, too, to get a Deshaun Watson, to get a Bradley Beal. You got to give up stuff. Like, when you're like, oh, I'm not giving up Quinnen Williams, well, then you're not getting Deshaun Watson. It's as simple as that. I'm not giving up RJ Barrett. Well, then you're not getting Bradley Beal. It's as simple as that.
Okay.
I'm not giving up draft picks. Then you're not getting these guys.
Now, Ian Begley was on DCR, our fine morning show, that you can hear every Monday through Friday from 5 to 8, and he was asked what it would take to get Beal.
It would have to be significant because, you know, you look at the James Harden trade and all the picks that were sent to Houston and that deal, and I think Washington shouldn't expect to get something specifically equal to that deal, but you want something in the neighborhood of that. So it's a bunch of picks, and it's a player on the level of Victor Oladipo. And I was talking to a bunch of teams a couple weeks ago, and they couldn't figure out who the Oladipo piece would be from the Knicks. So that would be the tricky part, getting them a player on Oladipo's level.
Now, here's the interesting thing. Houston got an absolute haul from the Nets for Harden. Haul! And they had no leverage other than the Sixers. Bradley Beal's not asking to be traded. If Washington trades him, they could shop him to 29 other teams. Now, I'm not saying 29 would want him, but they could really put together, they could put together a much better a package that's commensurate, although I don't think Beal is on the level of Harden. He's in the conversation, though. He's having that sort of a year. My point with this, I would love to get a guy like Beal, and I wouldn't worry about breaking up what's been a good situation for the Knicks, but I'm not giving up the farm. I'm just not. Now, would I think about maybe biting the bullet and giving up R.J. Barrett in a smaller deal? Maybe, but I'm not giving up Barrett, Robinson, quickly, and three number ones. I'm not doing that. The Knicks are not close enough to do that.
That's too much.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous. You proceed along. You've got other assets. There's things you can do. You make a pickup like you did with Derrick Rose, and you can see Derrick Rose has meant the world to Quickly and Toppin, and this is early. What a veteran could mean. Maybe add another such veteran, because you have $15 million in cap room. That's attractive to some teams that want to get rid of a contract. The Knicks don't have to give up anything just to fill that $15 million. So they could tell a team, we'll take your player and we'll take the money off your hands, but you have to give us a first-round draft pick. That the Knicks are dealing from strength. So, yeah, I would pull the trigger on a Bradley Beal deal, but now I'm not giving up everybody. The Knicks have enough nice pieces that I'm not going to give up everybody. I just don't think it's worth it.
I'm with Michael on this. Like, I think that is the time right now to tinker with this team? They're finally playing sort of above their talent level. They're overachieving for the first time in years. I just don't think you want to tinker with it at this moment. Don't you want to go through a season and see what you really have and then see what opportunities there are? I feel like this isn't the time to mess with it. And also, even if you mess with it right now, while Bradley Beal, if it turns out well, could make them more competitive, what's the ceiling for that?
What do you mean, what's the ceiling?
Like, do you think that they add just Bradley Beal to this team and can give Brooklyn a run?
No, but you could win a first round.
Is that I don't know if that's enough.
But for a team that's been horse manure for so long, it's enough.
Yeah, but
you've got to change the perception. That's what happened with the Nets. They changed the perception.
But they changed the perception first before they went and got anybody.
Well, they did
changed
it that
the perception
way
with young players.
They did it that way. I agree. They were able to draft players and, you know, take discards and make them into something special. The Knicks might have to go a different route because they want to do it a little faster than the Nets did. But I don't think you do it faster. I agree with you, at the expense of doing it right. But if you can make a smart deal where the Knicks could give up somebody, where Thibodeau and Perry and Wes and Rose don't think that they're as good as everybody else thinks because they see them every day, then you make that move. Now, if Thibodeau has told Leon Rose, you know what, R.J. Barrett's good, but he's not great, then you make that deal. Then you make that deal. You get out from under that player. I'm not saying that I would do that. I would be loath to give up R.J. Barrett this early because he's shown flashes. But Thibodeau knows better than all of us. Is he going to be great? I'm not sure. I'm not sure. He knows. I don't. And they could make mistakes too. But I wouldn't just turn my nose at Bradley Beal and go, I'm not doing it because I want to do this slowly. Yeah, if you could expedite the process, do it at the right price.
And that price is just not right.
Well, what Allen was saying is not right. I'm not giving up quickly.
Sounds like it's way too much.
And Robinson hurt his hand. He broke his hand against Washington, so that stings because he had the best first half of his career. So, I mean, there's always something. And there's always players that are available. So now Andre Drummond is available. That might be somebody the Nets would want to look into. That might be somebody that the Lakers would want to look into. Now Blake Griffin wants out from Detroit. Peter, you're going to love this stat.
Okay.
You think of Blake Griffin, right? You think of the dunk contest?
Yeah.
He hasn't dunked. He has not dunked in a game since 2019. Hasn't dunked. And he has this year and next year at $39 million. Mm. And that's one of those things where if I'm the team, you know how much dead cap space if you just release him? And who's going to pick him up for that money? So the Pistons who are trying to rebuild, they don't want to play a player like that at the expense of time for young players. But you can't just give him away. It's hard. I think there's still a lot of maneuvers left. A lot of maneuvers left. And Drummond's not playing. And they're not going to play him until they trade him. Blake Griffin's not going to play. And they're probably not going to play him until they resolve this. And the Knicks sit there in the seventh spot in the Eastern Conference, 13-15. And the future at this point seems brighter than it has in the past couple of years.
But if you now, as for the Nets, with this roster with Rose, and you're right, Rose has really worked out, then you're good, right? I mean, you make the playoffs and you break that spell and you get these guys a little bit of experience in the postseason. And listen, I would like to see Beal come here for the right price, but it doesn't sound like the price is going to be right.
No, and again, he doesn't want to be traded. His agent has said he doesn't want to be traded. So if they trade him, they're not locked into, you can only trade him here. They can really explore a big deal. As for the Nets, in the middle of two games ago, this is amazing how the Nets are run. Did you see this, Peter?
Hmm.
Kyrie Irving went up to James Harden and goes, you're the point guard, I'm playing off.
Yeah.
That's how the decision was made. And then Harden the other day goes out and hands out 16 assists. He's been a great point guard. And that takes a lot of the pressure away from Kyrie Irving. He's just going to play off the ball. And now, talk about like fragile players, unfortunately. Kevin Durant's out for the next two games.
Yeah.
Because of a hamstring injury. You hope it's two games. But they went into Golden State. They won fairly easily. Draymond Green said after the game, that's the team to beat in the East.
Well, they were
fabulous.
That's
the team to beat. Yeah, they were good. And that was without DeAndre Jordan either.
Now, was it Sacramento and Phoenix? Because so they can win those games without Durant.
Yep, they play Sacramento tonight, and the Knicks play Atlanta. Let's go to the phones. Let's see what you think. Let's go to John in Freehold. John.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Hey, John.
Listen. This Knicks team's been very, very fun to watch this year, Michael. I mean, they're very well coached. They're in great condition. They play hard, and they really seem to like each other. And that's a great starting point for this franchise, getting that core in place and building above that going forward. It's all about winning a championship, isn't it, guys? Isn't that what we're striving for here?
Definitely.
Not any quick fix moves. Listen, Bradley Beal's a brilliant player. Don't get me wrong. I love Bradley Beal. I'd love to have him on the team. But this smells like the Carmelo Anthony trade all over again, where you're trading multiple first-round picks, any young talented players you may have on your roster, also veterans. You're talking about salary cap consequences regarding a trade like this. You're talking about draft swaps. It's not the time, it's not the place for this franchise
guys. One thing I want to ask you, John, though. Everybody keeps bringing up, it smells like the Carmelo deal. The Carmelo deal was a good deal for the Knicks. He was a great player.
No, it wasn't, Michael. He could have waited till the summertime and signed them for nothing.
No, he would have gone to the Nets.
Players.
He would have gone to the Nets.
Then they should have let him go. Look how it turned out, Mike. It set him back years.
But it turned out badly because Stoudemire got hurt. But if Stoudemire didn't get hurt, that would have worked out. They still won 54 games with Carmelo. Carmelo played very well for them. They didn't give up anybody great to get Carmelo. They gave up nice, serviceable players. Look at the players they gave up. Is there anybody you sit there and you agonize over? Oh, he turned into just one of the greatest players of all time. No. Yeah. They jumped the gun. Dolan made them jump the gun. But if they didn't make the deal, they weren't going to be able to wait till the offseason. The Nets would have gotten them. And Carmelo was a good player for the Knicks. And the reason Carmelo didn't work out is because Stoudemire's body gave out. That's the problem, not the deal. Stop with the deal was a bad deal. His knees gave out, and then he didn't have a running mate. And his contract was still on the books. I'm talking about Amari. Everybody keeps saying, oh, it smells like the Carmelo deal. The Carmelo deal wasn't awful. It wasn't awful.
I mean, he was a 25-point player the entire time he was here. He led the league in scoring one year. Got them to the playoffs, 54 wins. I mean,
He would go down as one of the top 20 Knicks. He wasn't some hack. This guy could play, didn't have anybody around him. And we talk about the dysfunction of the Jets. How about the dysfunction of the Knicks? Constant changing of the front office, constantly different coaches. They didn't get him a running mate. It's almost like what they did with Patrick. Patrick really never got that great running mate. And now we see the way championship teams are built, they have to have a running mate. It's imperative. So Carmelo doing it alone, that's not going to work. And then you could say, well, Carmelo wasn't very embracing of Jeremy Lin. Okay, yeah, he wasn't. And that stunk. Maybe Carmelo knew that their type of games didn't mesh. Let's go to John in West Orange. John.
Fans of the show. Big fan of the show.
Thanks.
So here is what annoys me about what's going on with the Knicks. And I'm gonna call you guys out too on this.
All right.
Where is the line of high level free agents wrapped around 7th Avenue waiting to play for the Knicks because we hired Worldwide West? Because when he got hired, you three, Stephen A., and everybody in the world of basketball say, yeah, Worldwide West, William Wesley, he has all the relationships and blah, 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 blah. Well, where are these free agents?
Well, where were the free agents during the offseason when he got hired? Who did they miss out on this
year? Say again?
Who were the free agents this year that they missed out on?
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
They made one bid.
Where are these free agents?
They made one bid on Gordon Hayward. They thought it was too much. He got more than they wanted to give, and they backed out. They didn't miss out on any great free agents. And West was hired in the middle of all of this. Worldwide West is not going to make somebody come for less money, but he's going to make it more attractive.
But you guys, that's what you guys sold Knicks fans on.
Are you kidding me, John? He hasn't even been there a full off season. Are you kidding me? You want him to, like, change things all of a sudden? This thing has been so bad and a dumpster fire for so long, it's going to take quite a long time to climb out from under it. And getting a guy like Worldwide West, who has connections throughout the world when it comes to basketball, is only going to serve to help them. Stop it. That's ridiculous. What did he do during the offseason? How many free agents went somewhere during the offseason that you just had to have? Anthony Davis re-signed with the Lakers. He wasn't available. Next year, Giannis is not available. He re-upped with Milwaukee. Fred VanVleet wanted to stay with Toronto.
Yeah.
And we don't even know how much the Knicks wanted those guys. We know they wanted Hayward. That's the one they didn't get because they didn't want to outbid the last offer that he got. Sorry.
You can understand that.
Yeah. Might be a mistake. It might be a mistake. He wanted to come here, but the other offer was much higher. The Knicks didn't want to go there. To say that Worldwide West is a failure, give the guy some time. Let me ask everybody this, every Knicks fan that's listening within the sound of my voice. Do they have a better feel to them than they've had in the last 10 years? Is there a better feel about this team and what they're doing than they had in the last 10 years? If you say no, you're lying.
Or you're not watching.
Then they don't ask the question.
Because just having Tom Thibodeau, you have a professional, big-time coach. When's the last time that happened?
Listen,
Woodson, I guess.
Fans like the caller who just called have the right, I believe, after this season. Let's say the Knicks finish a game or two under 500. They make the playoffs. They lose 4-2 in the first round. But it's a team that's clearly going the right direction. And then they get passed over this offseason. I understand people getting concerned and saying, hey, what happened? I thought this Leon Rose Worldwide West thing was going to change that. But they haven't had the chance yet.
No, they have not had the chance.
And also, I don't think we were over the moon saying now all the free agents are going to line up. We've been dubious about that from the very beginning, no matter who they hire. You got to start winning games. But if this team makes the playoffs and they start winning some games, then you'll all of a sudden see how attractive they are, more so than hiring World Wide West or anybody else that's going to change the image of the team. The only thing that's going to change the image of the team, they start winning games. And they haven't done that in almost a decade.
I need a nickname like World Wide West. Come up with one for me, Peter. You're good at this stuff.
All right, let me work on that.
I mean, that's a big time nickname.
Yeah, that's tough to beat.
World Wide West.
It's tremendous.
Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. More of your phone calls, big basketball talk, and then we have Julius Randle on at 5 o'clock, which should be fun, right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
The Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. You know, because it's so often uttered that it's become just accepted fact. You know, this smells like the Carmelo deal. Like the Carmelo deal was terrible. So I looked it up. All right, so let's play like this is about 10 years after it happened, so we can actually look at it rationally. Here's who the Knicks traded to Denver. Wilson Chandler. Woo! What a loss. Raymond Felton. Terrible. Timofey Mozgov.
Oh.
That one hurts.
And Danilo Gallinari, who's actually become a serviceable NBA player. They gave up their first-round draft pick in 2014. They gave up the Warriors' 2012 second-round pick and the Warriors' 2013 second-round pick and $3 million in cash. How's that a bad deal? You got one of the top 100 players in NBA history in his prime. How's that a bad deal? And when you say, well, they should have waited until the offseason, he would have been traded to the Nets. That wasn't a bad deal. 10 years later, it wasn't a bad deal. And the Knicks also in that deal got back Chauncey Billups, who was not a bad player. So please stop with that narrative that, oh, this smells like the Carmelo deal. You know what? If it smells like the Carmelo deal, let's do it again. Then somebody on Twitter goes, well, they knew that Amari Stoudemire's knees were bad when they gave him $100 million. They didn't think it was bad to the point that he'd break down in the second year. So they were hoping that Carmelo and Amari could play together a couple of seasons while Amari was relatively healthy. To think that they signed into a $100 million deal and hope that they'd get 1 year out of him, that's folly. That's where the deal falls apart, because Amari fell apart, not Carmelo. Don and I lived through this for so many years. People continue, am I right, Don? Killing Carmelo Anthony. Like he was the reason that it all went wrong.
The funny thing is that for some reason, a lot of Knicks fans just always hated him. I mean, we had to defend him more than like any other New York athlete.
It's amazing.
They killed him for everything. And a lot of that had to do, and maybe rightly so at the time, of how you kind of knew that it wasn't going to work with Lin. And they loved Jeremy Lin. And I remember that was the whole conversation, if you remember, early in 2012, when Jeremy Lin was going off on how it was all going to fall apart once Carmelo came back from injury. And it pretty much did. And I think that's really what just started everybody hating on Carmelo. And then he was a ball hog, and all he was a shooter. And then you got people like saying that you can never win with Carmelo Anthony, which was an easy thing to say because he had never won before, although he did go to a conference final with the Nuggets in 2009 when they lost to the Lakers. And it's easy to say, well, you're never going to win with him when you're on a Knick team that didn't have anybody else but Carmelo Anthony and an aging Stoudemire that eventually was gone. Like Colin Cowherd when he was on ESPN. Oh, you'll never win with Carmelo Anthony. So easy to say when you knew the Knicks weren't close to winning. As if everything he did in Denver was like nothing. They forgot about that conference final run. And we defended him all the time. If that was a deal that worked for a dysfunctional franchise. If the Beal deal turns out to be Carmelo Anthony, it's a better run franchise. So they would have gotten even more out of it. If they were run as well now as they were when they made the Carmelo Anthony deal, maybe they would have won. And it's still the last time they went to the playoffs.
Well, here's Rick in Brooklyn. He thinks Carmelo is terrible. Why?
Michael, how you doing? A big, big, huge Knicks fan. I go back to, here comes Willis. But anyway, we gave up seven guys. And you and Don, you, not Don, you. You're always streaming. Calm down and relax. Listen, we gave up seven guys to get Melo. Those seven guys. No, nobody turned out to be Michael Jordan. But nice players. We were headed in the right direction then. Let me finish. Peter's streaming 25 points a game. Big deal, 25 points. He can score 35. We lose every night.
But they didn't lose 100.
I want W's. I want W's. Worst deal in Knicks history. But and let me finish.
But wait a second. Well, let us talk a little bit too, Rick. That's how it works.
Okay, go ahead.
Chandler, Felton, Gallinari, and Mozgov. Who hurt? What hurt to get back a player like Carmelo Anthony? And do you think they lost because of Carmelo or because they never got people around him?
I'll agree with you. We never got people around him, but I've been watching every game since 1970. We had a nice team. We did not need him. You were saying he would have went to the Nets. He's a free agent at the end of the year. Let him get traded to the Nets. He's a free agent. We signed him, and we still got all our guys.
If you know basketball, if the Nets had traded everybody for him, just like the Knicks, they would have signed him to a contract. He wouldn't have become a free agent. You wouldn't have gotten him.
But it's up to him. He don't have to sign.
But tell me this, though.
But
he wanted the
assurance of signing, and he wanted to play in New York. The Nets are in New York.
Now, Rick, tell me this. What if they kept those players, Felton, Mozgov, et cetera, what was the piece they were going to get that was going to get them to being a really serious contender?
It wasn't Melo. It wasn't Melo. We never became a serious contender.
But that's not true completely, because they were a contender.
54 games a year with
him. Nah, they won the first. They won one round of the playoffs.
But they didn't have any guys. They didn't have anybody around him.
But doesn't that stop the argument?
If you agree with me on that, then there's the answer. Carmelo Anthony is an outstanding player. Now, are you mad at him because he wasn't LeBron James? Oh, okay. Is that fair to him?
That's another, because all these conversations are flooding back to me from 7-8 years ago. And I remember that ultimately being the point. He wasn't Melo, right?
He wasn't LeBron.
Because that was like the plan B. Like, they all wanted LeBron, didn't get LeBron, or they got Carmelo. So he was talking about like the 54 wins and losing in six games to Indiana in the second round was no big deal. They haven't come close to doing that in the last 8 years.
And if they had not made that trade, the players that they kept and the 2 second-round picks, what were you going to dream on there? They were never going to be an elite team. With Carmelo, at least they got an elite player, and they could dream if they team him with Amari. You know what? Then they have two legitimate stars playing back-to-back with each other and maybe taking the next step. Those four guys that they traded were not going to make them a great team. It's just one of the most overused, dumb narratives. Oh, it smells like the Melo deal. Give me more of that smell.
He averaged 25 points a game here. 25. They make it seem like it's no big deal. But Peter, you weren't here. Everybody just hated on him for whatever reason. He couldn't get along with Jeremy Lin.
Even that story is overstated. I'm sorry. I was watching the highlight the other day of, I think it was the Toronto game, when the anniversary the other day of when Lin beat the Raptors. I mean, Carmelo was the first dude jumping off the bench hugging him. I think that story even is part of a narrative that people don't really know.
And also, Peter, I got excoriated. Don remembers when the Rockets gave that big deal to Lin and the Knicks wouldn't match it. I said, the Knicks are smart not to match it. He's not going to be worth that money. He never was the same player. His body broke down. He was never close to the player that he was those 11 games for the Knicks. Ever, ever, ever. That was a moment in time that was glorious. He didn't have the lasting power to be great. He didn't have the body that was going to hold up. And the Knicks were actually smart not to match that offer.
They get killed for something that, in retrospect, they were proven right on. And no one loved Linsanity more than me. But he's in the G League right now. He sat on the bench for the Raptors. Good for him. He turns it into a way to live and feed his family for a long time. But he wasn't going to be the guy who took them anywhere.
No. And people just have... They have these memories that they shift shape for their own well-being. Well, you know what? If he could have played with Lynn, you know what? Lynn would have broken down with the Knicks, too.
I mean, for the record, two things. One, that guy literally said the words at some point, Carmelo was the devil. He said that.
Right.
And also, I have to tell you this. Saying that you've been watching a team for 51 years doesn't mean you know what you're talking about. I'm sorry. Everyone says that. I've been watching since blank. Well, that's great. It means you're an incredibly loyal fan. It doesn't mean that your take on Carmelo is correct.
And Peter, because you weren't here, it was incendiary how people felt about him. They did treat him like Rick from Brooklyn. They treated him as if he was the devil. That all the Knicks' problems were because of Carmelo Anthony. That's how this guy was looked at on a game-by-game basis. Don and I had to fight it. All he does is dribble. Yeah, he wasn't a perfect player. Better than any player they've had in a long time.
And Peter hated Carmelo Anthony, loved Amari. Loved him. Could do no wrong when he was here.
Because Amari. Right. Amari came here when nobody else wanted to come here. Amari came here because they gave him $100 million. Nobody would even come close to giving him that. That's why Amari came here. Not because he wanted to embrace the turning the Knicks around. The Phoenix Suns wouldn't give him more than a 2-year contract. They knew him better than anybody. They knew his knees were going to just evaporate. The Knicks gave him $100 million. That's why he came here. And I'm not knocking him. Smart businessman.
But it's so funny. It's a really interesting 30 for 30, Carmelo, with the Knicks. He came here. There wasn't a legitimate controversy. Am I missing it? Was there a legitimate controversy while he was here?
Nothing.
Carmelo's basically a square. I mean, he's a good dude. Doesn't really get in trouble and never had any huge blow-ups. He's not the most overly emotive person, but he's a scoring, dynamic player and didn't get in trouble and even got the team pretty good for a while, and he's still utterly hated.
Amazing. It really, he's the reason that this all has gone wrong. Not the constant coaching changes, not the front office changes, nothing. It's him. Not bringing in Phil Jackson as a saboteur, not that. No, it was Carmelo. 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ice picks. Ice picks. Ice picks. Ice picks.
Got a couple on my mind here, guys. Islanders at minus a goal and a half at plus 200 in Buffalo. Sabres haven't played since January 31st because of COVID. So I think the Islanders will win and cover that number of plus 200. I would also take the Jets Oilers over under at 6.5 goals. It's only at minus 110, but maybe you can parlay that and have some fun with it. So those are two ice picks I'm eyeballing here at BetMGM. Play some money down here tonight, if you don't
now,
mind.
Now, your last ice pick you won over the weekend, right?
That's right.
There you go.
Picking the Blues. And the Blues are right now playing the Coyotes again for the seventh consecutive time because of COVID. These two teams have played each other 7 straight times.
I don't know, to me,
7 straight times?
Yes. Because the teams that they were set to play, Colorado and Minnesota, have had their games postponed because of COVID. So the league figured, let's just have these two teams play while the other teams are out. And so they've ended up playing 7 straight times.
That is insane. I really think tonight's game, Don, it's all about an aging Brian Trottier and a kid I'm hearing about, Alexander McGillney. I think that's to me.
Really good player.
Yeah, that's to me who decides this game.
Wow. Let's go to...
See, Michael, that's the beauty of old video hockey games. You see?
I always wondered what the beauty was. Let's go to Sal in Huntington. Hello, Sam.
Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hello, great show. I'm a Yankees fan for 74 years.
God bless you.
I want to make this question over to Don.
Okay.
If you don't mind.
Of course.
These guys, the hockey teams, they play each other back to back. If there's a penalty, like with 5 seconds left in the game, why don't they enforce it to the next game that they got to meet?
Oh, no, you don't. You know, you're not going to do that. There's been speculation about doing
that.
That
would
like
stop
the
chipping before the end of the game. You know what
right.
I mean?
But it's a different game. I don't know how you carry over a penalty from one game to the other. And then when they're not playing each other the next game, well, then it would be okay to trip somebody?
Only if they're playing each
right,
other.
No, of course. But I just say I think there'd be a little inconsistency in that. That's always been talked about in the playoffs to try to stop guys from committing penalties, have a carry over to the next game. It's a different game. No, I don't. I would not do that. Do you think that would be a good idea, guys? Carry over to the next game.
I don't know the game like you, but to eliminate a chippy penalty, if you knew you had to serve it the next game, that might stop it. What would be the reason for not having it the next game?
Because then that means then you'd be allowed to do that if you were not playing on the next game.
No, you shouldn't want to do it. But the one time that you could actually give them some kind of a ramification of a cheap shot, you can do it.
Well, if there's a cheap shot, there's a good chance that he could be suspended. But he's saying if I just trip you up with 5 seconds to go,
right?
Then we start the next game with a 1:55 power play. I don't think so.
I like it.
By the way, thank you, Michael. I meant to thank you earlier for tweeting that I was a slob on the internet.
That's what the people want.
You've got a very nice relationship right now with Flip. I don't get it, but it's been a major turnaround. But I think you're really taking advantage.
No, but hold on.
He gave you an inch, and you're taking a mile with that.
But he has been dressing beautifully.
But I wear suits every day. It's a holiday. It's basically a weekend. I'm wearing a T-shirt. They act as if we're doing a sports talk show. I need to wear a tux every day?
No, not a tux, but what I'm saying, I get it. You can wear a shirt, but you got to wear a shirt with a woman not, you know, like sexy leaning against the bottle. Michael, he's taunting Flip at this point.
No, first of all, Flip doesn't care. This is not about Flip. This is about the hack-a-doodle-doos who run home and turn on the TV and go, "Oh, I got to report to Michael. Peter's wearing a T-shirt. Peter's wearing a T-shirt."
For himself?
I can see for myself. I had no problem. I think that you dress like a slob. That wasn't pejorative. You dress like a slob. But
that's
you
not
dress
pejorative.
Like a GQ model most of the time.
None of it adds up to anything. I can't take a day off. I can't have one casual day.
You know what? A day off today? I don't know if you realize. Alex Lee decided to take a day off on President's Day.
Well, that's not. She didn't take a day off. She's off.
Well, we could take, as Don said, we get an extra day, which we'll never be able to take, but we do.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is Alex Lee didn't take off. She doesn't work for us, for ESPN. She works for the traffic company, and as a regular full-timer, she was probably just off.
This is something that really sticks in your craw, huh?
Well, and then the fact that I work happily, excited to see you guys, but I wear a T-shirt and have to get called a slob, you know, it's like, do I get bonus points? So here's my question. It should be a scoring system. If you guys are going to be such dorks out there sitting around in your underwear critiquing what I'm wearing, here's what I want you to do. Keep track every day on a point system of how everyone dresses. And then I can use those points on a day like today when I felt like wearing a T-shirt.
Peter, I have to apologize to you.
Go ahead.
I thought slob was just a fun little... I didn't mean it in a bad way. I'm sorry if you took it that way.
You thought slob was a compliment.
I didn't think it was a compliment. Wow. I thought it summed up the way you looked. But I didn't mean it that you shouldn't dress like that, because you outdress both of us every single day. Once baseball season starts, so I'll leave you in the dust. But
not in the dust. Not anymore. Impossible.
Interesting. Let's go to a Herb. It's either Herb or Herb. In West Iceland.
Why would it be Herb?
What's up, Herb?
Hey, guys. Just love you guys and enjoy the show every day.
Thank you. Thank you.
I heard that whole thing chiming in about Mello and the comparison and all that stuff and that deal.
Right.
And I have to tell you, I As a fan of basketball, I thoroughly enjoyed the season, and in an argument as far as how good they were with Melo there and that whole crew that was with them, I had the 2013 banner that says that they were the, you know, division champs that year. And I got a lot of pleasure out of that, and so did my granddaughter, and so did my wife. And
see, I'm glad you're saying that, because most people are just so negative about Melo. It's amazing, Herb. It really is.
Yeah, and I mean, he was in the All-Stars. I remember I went out, I bought the T-shirt. He was in the All-Stars. I thoroughly enjoyed him. And here was my grandchild. I was trying to teach her that sports isn't just about winning. It's about having fun, too. And I think people lose that in that it's got to be a championship. It's got to be a championship. You know, I'm a Yankee fan also. And we're spoiled. And when I hear people complain about the Yankees, it gets me angry, because I really feel that we're always in the playoff. You know, and if a team is constantly making it into the playoff year after year after year, you got a great team as far as I'm concerned.
True. You know, I would disagree with you on one point, though. For fans, it should be about fun, enjoying yourselves, and they give you. But professional athletes should be playing for championship, not to have kicks and giggles. I mean, they've got to try to win.
Yeah, they're not playing it for the fun of the game. It's a business, and it's a business to try to win. But from a fan's perspective, there's a lot of things that you can enjoy. Michael, some of my favorite seasons as a fan are years in which the team didn't win a championship. I just had fun watching them.
One of your most fond memories in baseball was the great play by Andy Chavez. You always tell me that.
Well, no, that's a little bit of a different story, because it was game 7 and they didn't win that game. But I'm just saying, seasons in which the team exceeded expectations, they maybe didn't go to the playoffs, or maybe they didn't go deep into the playoffs, but it was still a fun season. But I think now it's just like fans just don't have any tolerance for anything but a championship, especially for teams that are expected to win one. And if you're a Yankee fan like that, you've missed a lot of good baseball over the last decade. I know they haven't won, but Michael, there's some pretty fun things that have happened to this team since 2009 that if you're just going to scoff at because it's not a championship, well, then you're really not allowing yourself to have some fun, right?
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.